Shalom, welcome back to part 7 of Citizens of the Kingdom. We are probably in our last part of the series here. We're just going to kind of wrap up everything and just, you know, kind of talk about a couple different things here just to kind of give you some extra evidence that I'm not crazy, that these things are, there's evidence that these concepts of keeping the law, of being under the law, of works of the law, of all these things, that there's cultural evidence of what these terms mean, and that they've been misunderstood by the system of religion. That, sadly, because of Martin Luther's problems with the Catholic Church in the 1500s, that his problems that he had with them, he basically superimposed on Paul's writings, which it's called anachronism. He took problems of his own day and said these were the problems that were happening back then, but the evidence says no. The evidence points to the opposite of that, that there was no one who was keeping works in order to be saved, right? Okay, let's look at some of this evidence. Our first piece of evidence that we'll lay before you, it is from Josephus. It's his book, Against Appian, chapter 2. Lines 282 and 283. Now, speaking in flowery King James English, Josephus writes, "Nay, farther, the multitude of mankind itself have had a great inclination of a long time to follow our religious observances." What? The multitude of mankind has had a great inclination, a great desire to follow their religious observances. Who were these people? We've already discussed this, right? In Acts, throughout the book of Acts, when Paul goes and he's speaking to a group of Gentiles, where are they? They're already at the synagogue. They were a group of people known as the God-fearers. These were people who were already interested. Paul didn't have to go out and drag them away from their child sacrifice or their ritual orgies or anything like that and teach them the gospel. These were people who were already interested. They were already desiring to observe the religious observances. Continuing on. "For there is not in any city of the Grecians, nor any city of the barbarians, nor any nation whatsoever, whither our custom of resting on the seventh day hath not come." Double negative, right? So everywhere, the seventh day rest has come, "and by which our fasting and lighting up of lamps and many of our prohibitions as to our food are not observed." Again, that double negative, meaning that they are fasting. They are observing the lighting of lamps, probably the Shabbat candles, right? And they are observing many of our prohibitions on food. Now, he says many. So we can't really tell which ones in particular, but let's think about what were the food prohibitions in the first century. Okay, well, you've definitely got the kosher laws, right? These animals are clean and these are unclean, but we know from Mark 7 that had extended. They had taken temple purity and applied it to everyday life. And so they said, if you don't wash your hands and put yourself in a ritually pure state, you are eating unclean food. If you eat at the same table as the Gentiles, you are contaminating your food. So I'm going to guess that the Gentiles couldn't separate from themselves, right? And maybe they weren't washing their hands, but it says many of our prohibitions. I would wager a large bet, all of Rico's money, that those prohibitions that they were keeping were don't eat pork, don't eat shellfish, don't eat, you know, whatever the unclean food of the day was there. I bet that they were keeping Leviticus 11 because they were learning that in the synagogue where the Torah was being read. This is evidence. This is Josephus. This is a verifiable writer who's saying these people already were keeping the Sabbath, the fast, observing the prohibitions on food. He continues on, they endeavor to imitate our mutual accord with one another, charitable distribution of our goods, we see that in the New Testament a lot, and our diligence in our trades, and our fortitude in undergoing the distress we are in on account of our laws. Why would Paul come along and say, you guys are free from this, if they were already desiring this? They already saw that the Torah was good. They already wanted to keep, and they were already keeping the Shabbat. They were keeping the dietary laws. Why would they consider that a burden if they were doing that on their own accord? Because they desired to. They had no desire to be freed from such things. They were desiring to do those things. So that right there is a problem with the ideology that Paul was speaking against, that these things are works of the law. And this is very important, okay? Because we're going to see that certain scholars have said that these works of the law actually were the Sabbath, the food laws, and circumcision. Let's look at some more evidence. We can look at, and I didn't put the whole thing up here because it would be too long to read it, but we can look at what's called 4QMMT, which is from Fourth Cave of Qumran, scroll number 394, or line 394 and 395 of Dead Sea Scrolls. You can read it. You should be able to get it online. It basically says, these are some of our pronouncements concerning the law of God, specifically some of the pronouncements concerning works of the law, which we have determined. And all of them are concerning defiling mixtures and the purity of the sanctuary. So what are works of the law? Defiling mixtures and purity of the sanctuary. Well, who defiled them and what mixtures are we talking about? Well, it goes, there's like 20 laws, but I just listed the first three. A ban on offerings using Gentile grain. A ban on sin offerings boiled in Gentile vessels. A ban on sacrifices by Gentiles. Isn't that creating a wall of division, enmity between Jews and Gentiles, not, you know, Judeans and non-Judeans? I would say so. So very clearly here, we see that the works of the law, that this terminology of works of the law is talking about exclusion of Gentiles, separation from Gentiles. Let's look at some other evidence. If you go to Josephus, Antiquities, chapter 20, lines 17 through 96, you'll read about a story about a non-Jewish king of Adiaben, whose name was Azates. Now, I didn't go through and study this in depth, especially in the Greek, but there's a scholar by the name of Mark Nanos who wrote a book called Paul Within Judaism, that you can check this out. He has a great article that he just outlines perfectly and shows us. So here are some of the highlights. This king Azates, his mother is basically converted to being a Jew. She's keeping all the Jewish laws. And it says Azates lives according to Jewish custom and law, but he is not circumcised. And so he meets these two Jews who'd come into trade in his kingdom, Ananias and Eleazar. Now, Ananias argues that God will have forgiveness towards Azates for not performing the work of circumcision. That Greek word there, ergon, work, is the same one found in our New Testament when Paul's talking about the works of the law, or the works versus faith, ergon. Eleazar, the other Jewish guy, he's a Jew from Galilee and is most likely a Pharisee, since he is described as being extremely precise about the ancestral customs. Now, he argues for Azates being circumcised, and he uses, again, the terminology, ergon, work of circumcision. Now, throughout this whole thing, Josephus multiple times keeps on using this term ergon, or work, to denote the act of circumcision, which changes someone from being non-Jewish to being Jewish. So the concept, the way that Josephus is using this term, related to circumcision is a conversion ritual from being ethnically non-Jewish to becoming ethnically Jewish. That's what works are. If you're not saved by works, but by faith, and we're using the cultural understanding of this terminology, what are works? Works are conversion rituals to becoming Jewish. Don't we have people today who are doing that? You know what? I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. There had been times in my past where I thought, you know, maybe I should just kind of hide the fact that I believe in Yeshua and I should convert to being Jewish. Maybe things would be better. Paul would have a huge problem with that. The idea that somehow God, it elevates you in God's eyes to have a man-made, don't get me wrong here, but a religious system, men of a religious system say, you must do this in order to convert. Paul would have a huge problem with that. Right? Who holds the keys to the kingdom? Yeshua. He's the door. Not the Pharisees. Not the rabbis. Not the Orthodox or the ultra-Orthodox or the Reformed or the conservative Jews. God, in God's eyes, it doesn't matter which religious system you've converted into. That's what works are. Works are religious circumcision. And by the way, don't think that this just happens in Judaism. If you're not a member of our denomination, we're not sure you're going to make it in the kingdom. Right? I don't know that every Christian denomination does that, but I know there are some who basically are of the belief that if you aren't part of their denomination and they have certain requirements, certain things you have to do, you know, whether it's baptism or whatever, that you won't be saved. That you're not going to be part of the rapture or the resurrection or whatever they believe in. Let's face reality. Paul, when we understand his language, Paul is very against such a notion that somehow men control the entrance. No, God controls the entrance. And it's your faithfulness to God. And your faithfulness is lived out by what? By when he says something, you do it. When he says don't do something, you don't do it. Now, I kind of mentioned Martin Luther. There's a gentleman, and there's on the website, you can see there's an article to a gentleman by the name of James Dunn, and the article's name is called The New Perspective on Paul. And he kind of summarizes this book by E.P. Sanders. E.P. Sanders was a Christian in the 1970s who challenged the notion that the Jews believed in salvation by works. He said, I don't quite believe that, so let me look it up. So what E.P. Sanders did is he looked through every document that he could find, every extra-biblical writing from the first century, to see if he could find any Jewish person who believed that they had to keep the law in order to be saved. And guess what he found? This is a quote. It says, E.P. Sanders has shown that in the first century Jewish mindset, obedience to the law was never thought of as a means of entering covenant, of attaining a special relationship with God. It was more a matter of maintaining that relationship of God. By grace you were saved, not through works. See, we've always read that and we said, oh, there were people who thought you had to keep the Torah to be saved. No. Paul's not saying that. Paul's saying you were entered into the covenant by grace, not by works. And what were works? Jewish identity rituals. Conversion by a rabbi. By grace, by God's grace. He's already given you his grace. You can already enter the covenant without rabbi so-and-so saying you are, or pastor so-and-so, or you know, priest so-and-so. By grace, you have been saved. And so he labeled this concept covenantal gnomism. Okay? Now, ultimately, Sanders comes to this weird conclusion that Dunn talks about and basically shows is false. And Dunn comes to an equally strange conclusion that basically works of the law were keeping the Sabbath, circumcision, and the dietary laws. And that Paul was basically saying those things don't get you saved, but you know, you need to keep the rest of the Torah. We'll talk about that in the end here. Okay? So we've seen that throughout all of this, concepts of works being under the law, circumcision, works of the law, even sometimes references to the law itself, the flesh, the saints, these were all concepts of Jewish identity, of being part of the kinship group, being included in the congregation, saying, hey, you're welcome, come in and fellowship with us, sit down at the table with us. That's what these works were. That's what circumcision was. That's what under the law was. That's what Paul had a problem with. It was this concept of, well, if you're Jewish, you're acceptable. But if you're a Gentile, you know, you kind of just sit in the back. You know, you can watch, but you're not really important to us. Because you know what? That's going on today. It's very sad. Very sad. Let's go and let's actually look at Romans 2, verse 23 through 25. Let's see what, 29, sorry. Romans 2, verse 23. Let's see what Paul says of this. He says, you who boast in the law. Who are the people who boast in the law? The Jews, right? So here, Paul is talking about boasting in the law, being Jewish identity. Through your breaking of the Torah, the law, do you dishonor God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you, just as it is written. For indeed, circumcision is of value if you practice the Torah, but if you are a transgressor of the Torah, your circumcision has become uncircumcision. Now, let me ask you a question. If we're talking about physical circumcision, how can your, I mean, is he saying that if you break the law that you're going to have a regrowth of your skin? No, that's an absurd statement, right? What's he talking about? Jewish identity. He says Jewish identity is of value if you keep the law, but if you transgress the law, your Jewish identity is minus, you've essentially become a non-Jew. You've become a Gentile. Just the same as in Romans 11, where he's talking about the tree, the olive tree, and some of those branches being broken off because of disobedience. Yes, this is exactly what's going on. He's saying that unfaithfulness, breaking the Torah, lack of faith, can cause your circumcision, your Jewish identity, to become as good as being a Gentile. And a Gentile means outside of the group. And so if the uncircumcised man, i.e. the Gentile, keeps the requirements of the Torah, and we know that they wanted to, will not his uncircumcision be regarded as circumcision? Meaning that even if he's not physically circumcised yet, just like Abraham was not physically circumcised yet, will not his obedience count towards making him part of God's covenant people? Just like Abraham became part of God's covenant people prior to, or you know, and he started the group, but you know, in verse 27, and he who is physically uncircumcised, if he keeps the Torah, will he not judge you who, though having the letter of the law and circumcision, are transgressors of the law? There are 613 commandments. If this guy keeps 612 of them, but hasn't yet been circumcised, but you've been circumcised, you're a Jew, but you're living your life like a Gentile, you're doing whatever you want, you're acting horribly towards people, you're being mean, you're not loving your neighbor as yourself, you're cheating, you're stealing from people. Just because you're Jewish, does that make you better? No. That's what Paul is saying here. Being Jewish doesn't make you better. keeping the Torah is what makes you better. Paul is pro-Torah. This is the only way that you can read this, is that Paul is pro-Torah. Paul is saying if someone who isn't yet circumcised, he's not Jewish in your consideration. If he keeps the Torah, isn't he going to judge you even though you're Jewish and you're not keeping the Torah? Paul's saying it's shameful that you guys, you know, you're trusting and you're saying, oh, well, my father was Abraham, so I'm in the kingdom. Right? For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that which is of the heart, which, by the way, is a Torah principle. You can find that in the Torah, circumcision of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the letter, and his praise is not from men, but from God. If you don't worry about what men think of you, but you worry about what God thinks of you, which would mean that you desire to keep his law, just like the psalmist, right? Your law is within my heart. I meditate on your law. Then you worry about whether God praises you, not whether men say, oh, well, he's not a good Jew, or whatever the case may be. And please, again, I'm going to restate it because I don't want to be accused. I'm not putting down anyone. I'm not saying it's not a good thing to be Jewish. I'm not saying that the Jewish people are in any way bad. I'm just saying that we, as believers in Yeshua, who are not of Jewish ethnicity, we don't need to somehow convert and turn Jewish in order for God to care about us, in order for God to love us more. He loves us just as who we are. It's our obedience that matters to him, not whether men consider us to be Jewish or not. It's what who he considers to be Jewish. Remember that term Jewish means Israelite in the first century. Let's go and let's look at Romans 3, verse 27 through 30. He says, where then is boasting? It is excluded. By what kind of law? Or of works? No, but by a law of faith, or faithfulness, the law of faithfulness, not of works. The law of works is Jewish identity. For we maintain that a man is justified by faithfulness apart from works of the law. Now, this right here is going to show you that I'm not crazy. Paul, if you read this carefully, Paul is saying exactly what I'm saying here. Or is God the God of the Jews only? Is he not the God of the Gentiles also? Now, if Paul was talking about keeping the law for salvation versus just having some, you know, mental assent of faithfulness, why would he include this sentence here? Why would he say, or is God the God of the Jews only? Is he not the God of the Gentiles also? He must be talking, when he's saying works of the law, he must be talking about Jewish identity. That's the only way that that sentence makes sense. Either that, or Paul was just randomly just saying stuff. Look at the context here. I hope you guys are on board with me. This is one of those challenging things with the camera, is because I don't have an audience to see if everyone's on board with me. I hope that you're on board with me. If not, you know, send me an email. Let's walk through this sentence together. But I am challenging you that the only way that this sentence makes sense is if works of the law is talking about Jewish identity, because otherwise Paul's rhetorical question there makes no sense and is completely just an absurd statement to make. He says, yes, of the Gentiles also, since indeed God will justify the circumcised by faithfulness and the uncircumcised through faithfulness is one. So he's going back to the Shema there. He's saying, because God is Echad, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Yahweh is Echad, one. He can't, there's no such thing as a God of the Gentiles and the God of the Jews. There's only one God. And he's going to justify the same, the Gentiles and the Jews through the same thing, which is faithfulness. And we just saw in Romans 2, just a chapter earlier in the same letter, that Paul, let's go back here and let's look at this, because this is exactly what Paul is saying. Look at this. Paul is saying, if, verse 27, and he who is physically circumcised, physically uncircumcised, meaning, verse 23, the uncircumcised through faithfulness, he justifies it, if he keeps the law, will he not judge you, who though having the letter of the law and circumcision are transgressors of the law? Okay, compare that statement. We've got that statement. Compare that to this one. Since indeed God will justify the circumcised by faithfulness and the uncircumcised through faithfulness. Going back. Physically uncircumcised but keeps the law, will he not judge you? Indeed, God will justify the circumcised by faithfulness. Is there any question that faithfulness is keeping the Torah according to how Paul is defining it in the letter to the Romans? There can be no doubt. This is what Paul is talking about. And that rhymes even. So it must be true. Anything that rhymes is true, right? When we look at the cultural context, it's just amazing that Paul is no longer a heretic. Paul is pro-Torah. We just have not been raised to study the cultural language that he's using here in this day. Okay, let's go to Galatians 2, verse 15. I hope I'm not coming off across as condescending or anything. I'm having fun here, and this is just kind of me having fun, all right? Galatians 2, verse 15 or 16, through 16. We are Jews by nature, not sinners among the Gentiles. Nevertheless, knowing that a man is not justified by works of the law, but through faith or faithfulness in Messiah Yeshua. So what did he just say there? We are Jews, and we are the ones who know that a man is not justified by works. So wait a minute. Paul is saying the Jews already understand this concept that a man is not justified by works of the law, i.e. Jewish identity. Can I propose to you that one of the biggest problems, and we see this today, is converts. Converts. These people have converted, and they are just so zealous, they've done the right thing by converting, they go and tell everyone else, oh, if you haven't converted, God doesn't love you. God doesn't care about you. You've got to convert, just like I did. But the Jews are knowing, according to Paul, the Jews already know that a man is not justified by conversion, by works of the law, but through faithfulness in Messiah Yeshua. Even we have believed in Messiah Yeshua, so that we may be justified by faith, faithfulness, in Messiah, and not by works of the law, since by works of the law, no flesh will be justified. Not saying that works of the law aren't good. It's not saying that it's not a good thing to become ethnically Jewish, to convert. Now realize in the first century what we're talking about here, I'm not talking about going out to, in today's world and converting to rabbinical Judaism. I'm talking about becoming known in the community as someone who's Jewish. But he's saying that's not what gets you into the covenant community. Once they realize that you are keeping God's laws, they should recognize you, right? You understand what I'm saying here? So I'm not saying that it's not a good thing that, you know, that we should all shun being Jewish. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that that doesn't get you justified. Okay? The physical circumcision is something that is part of your walk later on. It's not what gets you in the door. We can go again to 1 Corinthians 7, verse 18 through 19. Why has a man called when he is already uncircumcised? or sorry, when he's already circumcised? Is he not to become he is not to become uncircumcised. Has anyone been called in uncircumcision? He's not to be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing. But what matters is keeping the commandments of God. Wait a minute. Isn't circumcision a commandment of God? It says that you shall be circumcised. That's a commandment. This sentence makes no sense. Unless circumcision is in reference to conversion rituals. To be converted into ethnically Jewish according to men's standards. That's the only way that this sentence makes sense. Because keeping the commandments of God would include physical circumcision. And Paul would be a heretic because he physically circumcised Timothy. He just said, let him not become circumcised. If anyone has been called in uncircumcision, he is not to be circumcised. Well, he just circumcised Timothy. So he just caused Timothy to have a grave sin, according to the systems of religion's understandings. No, we're not talking about physical circumcision. We're talking about ethnic identity. Is that making sense? I mean, this has really opened up my understanding as to all of these things. All right. So again, like I talked about, James Dunn and others have come to the conclusion that works of the law meant circumcision, keeping the Shabbat, and dietary and purity restrictions. And so they say that Paul thought that they should keep all the Torah except for those commandments. I disagree. We already saw that the Ger gets to keep the Shabbat. We already saw that the Gentiles were already keeping the Shabbat. We've seen that the Shabbat is not a burden. It's a blessing. It's a day off. These people came from a society where they had to work 7 days a week. Why would they say, no, I don't want to have a day off. To prove my faith, I'm going to work that seventh day. That doesn't make any sense. So, how can Shabbat be a work of the law? The only way we could say it's a work of the law, and I would propose to you that the problems that they had were the rabbinical additions to the Shabbat. And why would they have a problem with that? Because Yeshua had a problem with that. Him and the Pharisees were constantly butting heads because Yeshua said the Shabbat was made for man and not man for the Shabbat, meaning the Shabbat should be something that you enjoy. The Shabbat should be a day when you see someone being oppressed that you go and you help them out, you relieve that oppression. That's what the Shabbat is about. What about circumcision? We saw earlier that they didn't even check physical circumcision. This rabbi had never even claims he never even looked at his own circumcision. We've seen in the letters of Paul that, I mean, he did circumcise Timothy, and yet, you know, all these things, and we've seen circumcision used over and over and over again as a conversion to a certain religious sect, a certain religious system outside of the means of how it was kept in the Torah. And dietary restrictions, we know that Yeshua had a problem with the Pharisees because they were saying, you have to wash your hands before. You have to be in a state of ritual purity. They were taking temple purity laws and they were applying it to everyday life. And Yeshua had a problem with that. Well, at least he had a problem with people telling him that he was breaking God's commandments. Now, what he really had a problem with is people saying, you can't eat together because you're a Jew and you're a Gentile. You have to separate. That's where a big problem came in. And that's where I propose to you that works of the law fall under are these man-made additions to the Shabbat, to the dietary laws, and to the circumcision based on the evidence that I've presented. I hope that this makes sense to you, right? Because these are all things that are in the Torah, but men had basically come and overridden these things. They had not overridden them, but they had added on to them, and they made them into a monster that the Torah was never supposed to mean to do. They had made them into something that created division between those who were considered ethnically Jewish and those who were not considered Jewish by the community, even though they were keeping God's commandments, even though they had submitted themselves to his will, like Cornelius. The guy who prayed three times a day, who was considered a tzaddik, a righteous man, who gave alms. And yet, even in his excellency and faithfulness to God in keeping the Torah, they had to separate themselves out because, oh, he hasn't converted according to our rituals of conversion. Can I propose to you that what Yeshua and Paul and the other disciples had a problem with, what they opposed, was submitting to religious leaders' requirements for conversion and thereby entering this caste system of oppression? Being relegated and saying, oh, well, you're just a convert, or you're just a God-fearer. You're not worthy for us to eat at your table. That's what Paul had a problem with. That's what Yeshua had a problem with. And that's what all of these things, I would propose to you, that's what Paul is dealing with. Now, Paul wasn't anti-Torah. Paul was anti-caste system, anti-religious conversion system. We are citizens of the kingdom. We've received our citizenship from God through the adoption as sons, not from men. In God's kingdom, there's equity. There's one justice system. Doesn't matter who you are, when you enter God's system, there's equity. You are treated as a human being. God loves each and every one of you. He considers each and every one of you special. And being born Jewish, having your DNA prove that you're Jewish, doesn't change God's opinion of you one bit. It's whether or not you are faithful to his son, and you're faithful to his commandments. Amen. I pray that you've enjoyed the series, and I pray that Yahweh bless you and keep you, and I pray that you study this out, that you don't believe what I say, that you go and you check out as many of the resources as you can, and you prove it to yourself that you have value and worth in God's kingdom, regardless of who your father was, who your mother was, who your great-grandparents were. That in Messiah Yeshua, you are a citizen of the kingdom. Amen.